Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRouche Show for Saturday, December 10th, 2011. My name is Marcia Mary Baker. Our topic for today is facing and acting on the reality of the British drive for war. We have two guests to discuss this. In fact, as it turns out, one of them is in Europe, and we're so glad to have back on our show from Milan, Italy, Liliana Guarini. Welcome, Liliana.
Thanks, Marcia.
And Liliana is the chairman of the LaRouche Movement organization in Italy, Movisol, or Movimento Solidarite, or Liliana, perhaps it's a longer title than that.
The official is Movimento Internazionale per I Diritti Civili Solidarietà, but we are known as Movisol in Italy.
And I was saying that we are both guests are either abroad or oriented abroad, but that doesn't take away from our focus on what we have to do here in the United States. But with me in the studio, we welcome back Ram Tanu Maitra. Welcome, Tanu.
Thank you, Marcia.
And Tanu is part of our whole Asian EIR intelligence operation. He heads up what you could say the New Delhi desk, Tanu. And he was in India for several weeks. He's been back a couple of weeks. And so we have really what amounts to a firsthand report from Eurasia about the strategic situation. So what I'd like to just say by way of introduction to our topic today is the situation in which we find ourselves is that we remain on the edge of the drive for nuclear war. Now, this doesn't arise from a coincidence of bad guys in multiple bad places, which you would think if you were watching CNN, Fox News, BBC, where think about it in recent months. They report from Libya or Sudan or Afghanistan, Israel, Pakistan, Syria, of course, and now Russia, as a matter of fact. So you know that this is the media machine, in a way, doing propaganda like Tanu and Liliana can speak. But in a way, I don't know if I've ever seen anything in my lifetime quite so blatant and so persistent. But it's a kind of presentation of a chess game activity in the world, you know, who's moving where. But the danger comes and is inherent from the fact that the British Empire of recent decades, especially in globalization, monetarism, speculative, like a world casino, this is dead. It's not merely dying, it's dead. It's like the walking dead. And the reflex reaction for an imperial system is to do what it does, go and make war. But of course, today, if you foster strife and warfare as a policy, you are on the short road to nuclear exchange, and that can obliterate the species, our humanity. So when I said the imperial outlook, I think our guests may have more to talk about, but this, what we're calling the British Empire, this London financial political control network, does have the outlook that there are the privileged and then there's the rest of the suckers in the world, and they're expendable, the latter ones. And so what we have is the necessity to stop this. Now, that brings us to what you will know, regular listeners or otherwise, that the critical way to break this is break the apparatus by having Obama out of the White House. He's been going along helping implement this on orders from London. That's why it was foisted on the United States. There are others internationally. So it isn't just events like what's the latest in Syria or somewhere else. This is the intent of this imperial war drive to get us in trouble, and Obama's part of pushing that ahead. Now, I've just defined our job. We have to do everything to get this guy out of the White House, that is either filing impeachment. We have precedent for that with other presidents. We have the constitutional amendment that's relevant to that. But I want to point out that among the news events of the last few weeks in this unfolding danger, There was the institutional action of some of the U.S. military, current and retired, who did speak out about the nuclear war danger, and it would be crazy for Israel, the United States, to think of attacking Iran as some ponderable thing to do. In fact, it would be insane, and it would bring the world into impossible war. So there are institutions, there are individuals speaking out. I want to say right up front that Mr. LaRouche himself is going to be giving an international webcast tomorrow, Sunday, the 11th of September, the 11th of December. It will be 4:30 Eastern Time, and you'll find that on his Political Action Committee, LaRouchePAC.com, 4:30 Eastern Time, because it's going to be a webcast address that he's giving to a live audience via the web. That's going to be meeting in New Jersey. And that event's going to be hosted by one of the national slate of candidacies, the LaRouche slate, Diane Sayre, who's running for Congress in New Jersey. So watch for that at 4:30. And that brings us back again to the fact, let me just say, I think people in the United States and elsewhere, our guests will discuss, have a sense that what's going on is not located in just the latest round of headline specifics from the Eastern Mediterranean or somewhere, but there's an overall overhanging doom facing mankind unless somebody does something. And that brings us back to that somebody is us. And I want to just throw out right at the beginning to encourage everyone to look on our website, LaRouchePub.com. You could go to LaRouche's LaRouchePAC.com. But Mr. LaRouche, who's been warning of this war danger for in the recent weeks, issuing the call internationally to act, he's been on the case this week when we've seen the British imperial activation to move in to try and destabilize Russia. There were the Russian elections last Sunday, and then among the people denouncing the elections for being fraudulent, denouncing Mr. Putin, and so forth, includes Mr. Gorbachev. We'll say more about him. Excuse me. Sorry about that. I've got one of those December colds. So I think we'll turn it over to Tanu to continue.
Well, really, the war danger, I think, is centered around the massive financial collapse that has happened. In fact, it is happening over the last 40 years, and this was pointed out by Mr. LaRouche on a number of occasions. He's perhaps the only one who had foreseen what is coming to this financial world. And he didn't pull his punch. He said it many times that this is what is coming. But since then, during Bush administration and then Obama administration, what they really triggered the warlike situation is by completely destabilizing the Arab countries and the Muslim world. There is no question that the attack on Syria, attack on Iraq, an attack on Afghanistan were all centered around basically to create a massive sectarian warfare within the Muslim countries. Muslim countries and the Arab countries in particular had always been very close to the British, because the British drew the boundary lines of Arabia from the First World War days to all the way to the Second World War. And they were pretty much in, they had developed a huge amount of assets throughout these countries. But nonetheless, there were nations such as Syria, Iraq, and Iran, who because of their civilizational past could never completely be won over or bought over or can be controlled. There is always this independent nationalist intent that these three countries always will had and always will have, and they will throw up leaders who will be independent-minded and will be looking after the national interest and also the regional interest. The Iraq war got rid of Saddam Hussein, and now the new strategy is to go after the Syrian leadership of Bashar al-Assad, and then the plans are already afoot, if not already the covert warlike operations have begun. Iran is very much on the plate, but there is a method in this madness, in the sense that Afghanistan was attacked not because there was a great deal of interest in Afghanistan itself, but Afghanistan, if you look at the map, you will find that Afghanistan sits in a very crucial area, which is it is the gateway for the Middle East, from Iran southwards to Central Asia and beyond, and also it is the gateway to the Indian subcontinent. It is also next door to China. So what is happening in Afghanistan, the war, the 10-year war that took place, was not for the purpose of resolving anything, but for creating the crisis, in fact, enhancing the crisis so much so that it engulfs Pakistan, which borders China and India. And therefore, at this point in time, what we are seeing is that the intense attack on Pakistan for its inability to deliver, quote-unquote, goods to the Americans in Afghanistan, Americans and NATO and U.S. in Afghanistan, is the real anger which is being expressed through various attacks on Pakistan that is happening nowadays. And the destabilization of Pakistan will definitely have its effect on China, which is, again, not as yet on the crosshair of the Western nations, but definitely is considered a threat to be eradicated over a period of time. And then, of course, Russia. Russia is a prized entity for the West, because Russia, not only because of its size and its enormous amount of resources that exist on the eastern part of Russia, is considered as a giant which is sort of sleeping, but it can wake up, and if it wakes up, it will have a tremendous impact, like China is having now, tremendous impact in the Eurasia landmass. And in fact, Russia, China, and India together can have an enormous impact, not Eurasia landmass, and as far throughout Asia, as far down as Pacific. So there's British geopolitical entities who have succeeded in taking over policymaking in Washington, I would say for the last 12 years or so, sees that this future danger has to be prevented by creating or lighting fire on their doors, like China's and India's and Russia's, and also at the same time unleash a sectarian warfare throughout Middle East. In Middle East, always that there was always this conflict-like situation existed within the Islam, between the Shias and Sunnis, which under an able leadership like that was of Saddam Hussein, despite all his faults, and Syria under two Assads, and Iran has never really succeeded. But the collapse of the financial system, which has given the British, and with the help of the Saudis, a new new thrust to take over the resources of these Middle Eastern countries, and by unleashing a sectarian warfare. But this kind of sectarian warfare in the present nuclear age has a great deal of danger, with the danger of a full-fledged nuclear war. For example, in Pakistan, you know, if you talk to a Pakistani analyst, he will point straight away that the only interest of the United States is to take the nuclear weapons and other nuclear weaponization capabilities of Pakistan, so that Pakistan can be fully controlled. Pakistan cannot be fully controlled till such thing that they have these nuclear weapons. So the only way to get these nuclear weapons is to go for a nuclear warfare in Pakistan itself. And the conditions have been made such that any attack on Pakistan today, nuclear or conventional, will get full-fledged support from the American people, because over the last 10 years, what has been sold to the Americans by this British-influenced White House, one of Bush and then of Obama, is that Pakistan is the reason why all this terrorism is happening, all these differences and conflicts have been built up within the Muslim countries, and why U.S. operation in Afghanistan, whatever that was, it was never very well defined, never succeeded. And so therefore, that Pakistan has to be tamed, subdued, in fact, subjugated. And it can be only done through denuclearization of Pakistan. And Pakistan's only survival at this point in time, at the highest level, this is the way it is being considered, only chance of survival is to keep its nuclear weapons intact. And one should not be too surprised about this. I will just point out two things. One is that Iran is targeted today simply because Iran has developed nuclear weapons capabilities. Whether they have fully developed it or not, nobody would really know other than the Iranians. But they have the wherewithal to do it, and it is essential that, you know, for Iran, that they have the nuclear weapons. Without the nuclear weapons, their survival will be in danger, because you see, Gaddafi once upon a time had a nuclear weapons program. He dropped it, and then he's dead. Saddam Hussein falsified his nuclear weapons capability, and West came to know about it, although they put it in a different way, in a different format, but they knew about it, and that was led to Saddam getting hanged. So, you know, the nations who have certain capabilities, you know, if they do not have nuclear weapons at this point in time, will have a very difficult chance to survive, particularly if they are presently the enemies of, you know, British, Saudi, and United States. So that's how the situation has built up. And for years, the financial thing was collapsing. And in order to, you know, get some money into the bank, they have used opium and other drugs in order to generate cash through the offshore banks and all that. But the requirement of cash is so much nowadays that even this $1 trillion of drug money that is generated every year is not enough to keep the financial system alive, or these financial institutions alive. So now the only option that is left is to go for a full-fledged war, and through the war get the resources, destroy the countries, destroy the independent leadership capabilities, and get the resources. And the resources are the only things, you know, in a financial collapse, all the currencies will eventually die, and the only thing that will be alive is the things that are underground at this present point in time. So this is the plan that the British have all the time. This is the colonial This is typical colonial mindset, and this is how the British Empire was built. They wanted, didn't want the countries. They wanted the resources of the countries in order to enrich themselves. This is very much alive again, and it has been sold fully. The entire bill of goods has been sold to the United States, and the United States, which is diametrically, the real United States, which is diametrically opposite to this concept, has now succumbed to this British policy. And there is, at this point in time, there is really no way out other than to have a war. A war is essential. The people who have the military power and the geopolitical capabilities and their colonial mindset will go for war. There is no other option they have at this point in time. And that's the way I look at it.
Well, you've given us the geopolitical pathway to doom, since whatever the colonial mindset, as you call it, however on its merits, was hideous for centuries with famine, disease, and, you know, what's it to them? That's their policy. The fact of nuclear war being now at risk as qualitatively hideous and different. Liliana in Milan, I think that your update on what's happened in the last 48 hours in Europe with this EU summit, which is another point of complete anti-nation state action. Could you give us the latest developments there?
Yes, of course. The situation seen from the Italian standpoint, since we just had a new government imposed upon us by the European Union and the European Central Bank, literally, because it was Trichet at that time, the head of the European Central Bank, and Draghi, who was the head of the Bank of Italy and is now the new head of the European Central Bank, who wrote to Berlusconi a letter demanding the austerity budget, which now the new government has been able to impose upon Italy. So it was imposed upon us by a dictatorship, which everybody in Italy sees very clearly as a dictatorship of the European Union and the European Central Bank, and also is identified pretty much in Merkel and Sarkozy. And Merkel and Sarkozy just had one more of many summits which failed completely. They have had incredibly many summits in the last months, and they have been one more a fiasco than the other. So they keep failing in trying to impose a European Union, a fiscal union. And also mainly because Germany is opposing the idea that the European Central Bank becomes, as the Federal Reserve, a bank which is able to be the creditor of last resort. The other reason of the failure was apparently that Cameron vetoed the fiscal union. And this was emphasized by a scene which I saw in the news, in the Italian news a few minutes before you called me, in which Sarkozy refused to shake hands with Cameron because of this, and this was a big scandal. And this is the typical British trick, as Tanu was explaining before. The British Empire stays out of the games, but they, at the same time, inspire the gains, because they prefer to see the Europe under these dictatorships, since they know very well that the euro crisis will continue and it will finally and ultimately destroy all European countries in Central Europe and in the Mediterranean, starting, of course, with Greece, Italy, Spain, Portugal, but continuing also with France and Germany. And they rejoice over this. This is like the typical imperial strategy of putting one country against the other. And it's working. It seems to be working, because Italy has been put under receivership. We had the budget, which was just finalized by the Monti government a few days ago, will provoke, according to official statistics, 1 million poor in Italy in the next month. Mm-hmm. They have cut down pensions, increased the pension age. They have abolished a lot of labor rights. They have increased the gasoline price with a tax on gasoline. They have increased the VAT tax. They have hit more the poor than the rich, although they were claiming to be equal. And of course, they didn't do any of the measures which we had proposed to stop the speculation on the Italian state bonds, which were the reason for this crisis. The difference, the spread between the Italian state bonds, BTP, and the Bund, the German state bonds, had come up to 550, so 5.50. And the only way to stop this would have been to adopt a Glass-Steagall reform, a separation of commercial banks and speculative banks. And they didn't do any veto on derivatives speculation on the state bonds, which is still possible in Italy. And this has created a situation in which the population is in a total state of rage and desperation. The only party which is opposing presently the Monti government is the Lega Nord, the party of which wants northern Italy separated from the rest of Italy, for many reasons, which one can explain at a later point. But it's interesting that the official radio of the Lega Nord has interviewed me and Andrew Spanos very often in the last months, because we represent that, as the host said, Ortelli, voice of reason, that voice outside of the chorus, which is saying the truth about the Monti government. And with me was interviewed a member of the Defense Committee at the Italian Parliament, Onorevole Gidoni, who was very worried not only for the economic measures taken by the Monti government, but also because of the role the Monti government may play in a war. Since he said, it feels to me like I'm in Argentina, because the new defense minister, Admiral Di Paola, is a top NATO general who was one of the people who worked at the Lisbon Treaty, which foresees joint interventions, military interventions of Europe, as it happened already in Libya. So something similar to this could happen very soon in Syria and in Iran. And of course, the presence of such a top NATO general in the government, and of Terzi, who is the new foreign minister, who was the ambassador to Washington before he came in the Monti government, would be a guarantee that whatever the British and Obama and Israel plan to do, Italy would support it. And of course, Gidoni opposed this, I opposed it, and we declared the urgent need to have parliamentary interrogations at the Italian parliament to stop this, because of course this is not the measures Monti will announce at press conferences. They would not say it, but already today, for example, a member of the opposition of Syria was received by Foreign Minister Terzi. So it is for sure that differently from the previous government, which had a lot of problems, Berlusconi had a lot of problems himself. He was certainly not a humanist, but he was very close to Putin, and he had a very good relation with Russia. This present government is completely on a war path. So we are very worried, and this Lega Nord party has expressed the same worry at the war plans of Obama and of the British. And also, we were asked what is the story with the impeachment of Obama, because there are many worried in Italy about the fact that the Libya war was started without asking Congress first. So there is a lot of interest in every move towards the impeachment of Obama here in Italy.
Right. Well, we have, I think the dynamics you describe of danger couldn't be clearer. You may have questions you want to ask each other, but one thing, Tanu, mm-hmm. you outlined the general and historical dynamics involved, and the issue of the national identity of peoples, or, you know, collective identity and cultural identity,
right,
that despite the British trying to play everyone off against each other. Do you want to say something about the apparatus underway, as Liliana did? In other words, there's a British-Saudi apparatus. There are key individuals. Obama is what we're talking about. Gorbachev is another one. Could you describe this?
Well, the what is happening or happened over the last number of years throughout Middle East and part of subcontinent and all over Central Asia is a concerted British Saudi operation to destabilize all the Muslim countries, but also usher in or bring forward once again the differences between the Shias and the Sunnis. The basic objective of the Saudis had long been, it is a part of their national policy and ideology, which we in Washington tend to ignore or rather brush aside, is that they have a variety of Islam, which is called Islamic Tenet, which is called the Wahhabism, which is the national religion of Saudi Arabia. Wahhabism is not accepted by anywhere in Islamic countries. A handful of those adopt this Wahhabism, which is extreme orthodox, virulent form of Islam, which have very little tolerance for other sects within Islam and for non-Islamic religions as well. So the Saudi Arabia had long been financing all over Islamic countries and even non-Islamic countries to convert the Muslims from their moderate or less virulent views of Islam to this virulent form of Islam. And this is really creating the division within Islam, which cannot be papered over, or which cannot be tolerated by the people themselves. And British know very well that this is the only way that a permanent state of conflict can be created within the country. So Wahhabism of Saudi Arabia were backed very heavily by the Brits, and this we saw in all over in Pakistan. We are seeing that emerging all over. This it exists all over now in Gulf. Yemen is one of the major victims of this thing. In Bahrain, although a minority, but they because of the Saudi clout, and Bahrain being the Fifth Fleet base of headquarters of the United States, Bahrain's the Sunni Wahhabism thing has been played up in a way in which it has created a permanent conflict state with the majority Shias. So this British Saudi operation is basically centers around that Saudis will be allowed to spread Wahhabism throughout the Islamic countries, and they will move northward through Central Asia to Russia's southern flank, because Russia has a number of Islamic provinces like Dagestan, Chechnya, South Ossetia, and then the Central Asian states like provinces like Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, in particular Turkmenistan also could be included in that. These were under the Soviet Republic for almost 70 years, and the Islam became very mild and very moderate in those countries. Now they have been the Islam, but they are also extremely poor. So the Saudi money and the British capabilities in those countries have created a huge rise of the Wahhabism, which is then adopted by various terrorist groups, who preach the same thing, but they do it through the gun. They are not white-robed Quran hand those who hand out Quran and free food. That's one side of the Saudi operation. The other side of the Saudi operation, which is more British and trained by the British, controlled by MI6, is this huge number of terrorists that have emerged in Central Asia and Pakistan and also in Iraq today. These are all created. These were all created in order to keep these countries in complete turmoil. And in case of a war, they will be activated and they will be acting as the direct agent of this colonial power like Britain and Saudi Arabia, which is becoming like that. The Israelis, of course, are the very thin layer of Israeli leadership that really pushes this thing. I don't think the Israelis in general have any particular fear or the uneasiness about Iran. I think if a poll is taken in Israel, you will find that 70 or 80% will come out saying that we do not want any conflict with Iran or any other country for that matter. But, you know, Netanyahu and Barak and people like that are, you know, very much in the British bag, and they want a conflict in Iran so that Iran's independent way of doing things can be permanently destroyed. That's their objective. I personally do not believe they will ever succeed. But at the same time, they can capture the huge oil reserves and oil and gas reserves that Iran has, which is, in case of a nuclear war, what you have. In case of a nuclear war, you will be losing all the people, large number of people, but those things under Earth will remain intact. So that is what the British are pushing for. In case of a nuclear war, it is they who are going to gain. And there is nothing for them to lose. And that's the way they look at this whole thing. As far as the human beings are concerned, they really don't give a hoot about that. That is not their concern. Their concern is, in order to build up the empire once again, which pretty much was gone, and it was pretty much gone because the American Republic was the key figure in battling the British colonial system. All the years that till I would say last two or three decades, and now also we see emerging nations like China, Russia, India. They have no colonial background, and they are more interested not only to develop their own countries, but they are interested to make the region safe. And only way the region can be made safe is by getting these British elements out of there. And build the huge Eurasian landmass into a very livable area and prosperous area. So this is the British methodology. There are zillions of terrorist groups that they have formed. To name them, it's a list that will run for 15 minutes. You can go on saying that. But they have only one purpose. The purpose on ground, they are, what they say is that they are out to spread Islam. But they are not spreading Islam. They're spreading a variety of Islam, which is run from Saudi Arabia with the help of the British MI6. And that's what is going on in Central Asia. That's what is going on in Pakistan. That's what was tried in Afghanistan in 1995-96 when Taliban came to power. But that didn't survive for too long. They're trying it back again. But all over Syria, Iraq, and Gulf area, and even in the Maghreb countries of Northern Africa, I think the same process has been unleashed. I think that this is what the British policy is.
Yeah, and I would like everyone to make sure and look on the websites for a document short by Lyndon LaRouche, Was It Hillary's Error? This is regarding Moscow and Russia and the last Sunday's elections. It's December 8th that LaRouche issued this statement, Was It Hillary's Error? Because you describing Tanu, a whole process of capability to intervene and cause turmoil and strife and dissension actually extends to setting up false groups. There is a whole swarm of them, NGOs,
right,
around the world for different purposes.
Right.
And these honest elections, democracy ones, have been activated. It's like a clinical textbook case of British Empire methods for
right.
the last couple hundred years. To say that the election last Sunday was unfair. In fact, today, December 10th, I think there are more demonstrations being orchestrated. And I want people to know that since then, too, our LaRouche PAC will have part of the information that's come to light about Obama, the precursors to having Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, criticize the elections,
yeah,
include telephone calls and between Mikhail Gorbachev, always a functionary for London,
yeah,
and Obama, and Susan Rice, the London-run U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. We're going to be posting that on LaRouche Pub in the next 48 mm-hmm. hours. And I just think that that's a textbook case. Liliana, from Europe, you must be seeing likewise. Is that right? A lot of the media to the disfavor of Russia and Putin?
Yes, pretty much, although there are a lot of economic interests between Italy and Russia and Germany and Russia, which makes us look at this from also from a different standpoint. Because, for example, all our gas supplies depend on Russia. And if there is a crisis there or a war or a regional war set up by the British, we will be without heating. So the people don't like this. They are aware of the fact that there are gigantic economic interests in that area. So they do see the demonstrations. They were on the news now with the white stripe so to remind of the orange revolution. Now this is the white revolution. But I think there are people here who look at this with a big skepticism mm-hmm. because they know that these things can be organized. They saw it elsewhere. And there is a lot of worry at what Russia may do if people try to provoke revolts or regional wars inside their borders. Also, this was one of the themes of the interview we had with Radio Padania. And again, there is a lot of interest at the role of the U.S. in this and of Obama personally. I didn't see very much about Hillary Clinton's role until now, but for sure, since the war in Libya, which has made Italians very angry, because Libya used to be a country in which Italy had an interest. And Mattei created a lot of contracts with Libya, with Eni, the main national oil company, which were destroyed by the war, and the French were trying to take over these oil interests and the British, but mainly the French. There is a very clear idea that the Emperor Sarkozy, together with the British, is trying to use these wars to gain some gain for his own economic interests. So we are looking at a situation in which in the middle of the worst economic crisis we had since the Depression, we could have also war and regional conflicts in the area of Russia, which could make our situation even worse. This is clear to many people. And yes, however, the media and the press and TV are, of course, reporting about the reduction of votes for Putin's party, and they're reporting about the demonstrations. They showed yesterday naked women who were demonstrating against the supposed vote fraud. And I guess we do see this stuff, but we also see that there is something behind both the war drive and the Euro crisis and the attack on Italy, which is the collapse of the financial system. Some people see this because it has happened in Europe already once. We had this during the Depression. Somebody wrote, not us, but I reported it in a statement today, somebody wrote that we had the balanced budget, which has been imposed upon us by the European Union in the Constitution. The only time when Italy had that was in 1925 with Mussolini. So there is a clear idea that when a depression coincides with a war danger, this is going to end up with dictatorships and with people starving and with cold winters. And there is an image of this. People are terrified. They are, as Helga Zeplarush wrote in her statement on the eve of the Third World War, the reaction to this war danger is sometimes irrational. People just hide, they remove, they just want to concentrate on Christmas, they want to have the last fun they can have now because they know it will be over after that. But it is clear, there is a feeling here that we are in a depression and in a period of war danger, and that many of these events are setups.
One thing that should be made very clear is that people do not really understand that these democratic movements and the human rights movements are basically a first attack before going for full-fledged uprising. For example, the accusation against the United Russia, that is Putin's party, is that they have stuffed ballot boxes. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, if you rig election, you just don't stuff ballot boxes, but you rig election in a way that all the votes that come in are basically coming in to the party that is rigging it. Stuffing ballot boxes do not change election much. It may change a little in a district, or even not in a district, in a area or sub-district area. Moreover, the votes that came in large numbers, and United Russia didn't get as many votes as they expected, the votes didn't go to the democratic forces, it went to the communists. So there is no reason to believe that these democratic movements and human rights movements have any real base. But this is where the first attack starts. Because once you could get the democracy, because what is very easy in West and also in West means Europe, and also in the United States, is to get the people all excited about the violation of democratic rights and human rights. And people, public support or public's non-interest in what is happening in Russia is developed very quickly when you explain to them that the democratic violations had occurred and human rights violations have occurred. Now, this thing will lead to what the plan is, that this thing, the way it worked in Syria, I think it worked also in Libya and places like that, is that this thing, democratic, under the pretense of garb of democratic rights and human rights, armed people will show up and they will start attacking the nation's security forces. And that's what has happened in Syria, where at least 1,100 of military people, security people, have been killed by these so-called promoters of democratic rights and human rights. And when such a thing happens, a country with leadership that it had, you know, Russia has, they will not allow this thing to continue, and they will clamp down, and they will then will not allow and disarm the, try to disarm these people and try to get these militant crowd out of the way. And then you have got the ground for a full-fledged outside involvement to supply arms, to send people from here and there, inside Russia to create major incidents. And once those major violent incidents start happening, then there is a ground is now ripe for a full-fledged attack, a war-like attack can be created. This is being done in Syria. This is being now in progress in Iran. This was done. This is the way that Libya thing happened, because what what is understood by these British geopoliticians, and to which the Obama administration kowtows completely, is that just simply democratic, bringing the democratic forces or pro-West democratic forces is not good enough in countries which have got a civilizational history, because they will always look after their own interest more than the interest of these colonial powers. So therefore, you can change Putin to a pro-West Russian leader, but you will find soon enough that pro-West Russian leader is taking the position which you will not be able to accept, because you will be thinking about the Russian interest, because that's the basic character of a nation like Russia. The same thing happened in Iraq. You know, you could replace, they have killed Saddam Hussein, and they have killed many, many thousands others. And now you have a leadership of al-Maliki, who you'll find will be more anti-West and more pro-Iraq than Saddam Hussein probably was, because, you know, this is the basic civilizational character of Iraq. And same thing is going to happen in Syria, and same thing will happen in Iran. There's no way you can convert these people into a pro-West, pro-British, pro-Saudi Arabia leadership who will be catering only for their interests. It cannot happen. So the only way out in a situation like that is a war. And that by war, you can completely set the table afresh, because you kill off most of the people. And at that point in time, your might, your military might, your superiority can be established. And there is a strong possibility, and I still say it's a possibility and nothing more than that, that you will be able to then dictate terms to these countries the way you like.
Well, I think you've certainly given us a textbook of the empire inside and out case of what the from inside the mind of the intention
That's the
of these
way they
people.
Work.
So in the remaining minutes, let me just bring up two points. One I'll say for a minute and then turn to Liliana and you in the final closeout. Because one thing is that we have a special responsibility, those of you in the United States listening to this now in the coming days, the final days of this calendar year, but to break this, to just break with this entire thing, that this insanity that Tanu just described, and that is to do everything in your circumstances, you know what it is, think about it night and day and do it, that we should activate to have Obama out of office. It can be either the Nixon-esque form of people tell him. It can be the impeachment form. We had this. We have precedent. You know, actually, George H.W. Bush, there were still people in Congress. Mr. Henry Hank Gonzalez from Texas joined with others and filed a bill of impeachment against the senior, so to speak.
Yeah.
For going into Iraq, and in fact, well, for starting the Iraq War, and in fact, he didn't go into Iraq. He just initiated the war. He got Congress permission. We have so many grounds for impeachable or otherwise removable
sure.
offenses.
Sure.
But that requires everyone here, and Congress is now, the institution is there. A lot of those who occupy Congress are no good nicks, but now they're going to go out of session for the holidays that Liliana was just describing. People can go into a fantasy. Don't. Stay in touch. I want to point out one thing here is next week, instead of the LaRouche show, we're going to ask you to be tuning in to an international webcast by the R&D Basement Research Team of LaRouche Political Action Committee. They're going to have an afternoon on LaRouche PAC event webcast. It's called A Policy Initiative for the Survival of the Human Species. It begins at 1:30 Eastern Time. Mm-hmm. And so Liliana, let me just do this, and then Tanu can have a remaining minute or two, because, and I, Liliana, you mentioned Enrico Mattei and the kind of real humanity and destiny and geography of Italy in terms of Northern African development, what we ought to be doing. That's part of getting rid of Obama. And Tanu, you also mentioned that all of Eurasia, you can say that after Liliana and just wrap up, meaning China, India, Russia, and a non-Obama U.S. So go ahead, Liliana.
Yes, the idea that is our best tradition, the idea in the 60s of a real economic recovery, which started with Mattei and his deals, direct deals with oil-producing countries against the Seven Sisters, which is probably the reason why he was killed. But this idea was picked up again by the previous government, of course not by the Monti government, which is a banker's government, but the previous government, for example, the former Interior Minister Maroni had demanded a Marshall Plan for Northern Africa to solve also the very bad crisis of emigrants coming from the war areas into Sicily, which couldn't be dealt with. And it is obvious that Italy's natural role is this, of connection towards Northern Africa for development of this area. There are projects like the Transacqua project to use the water of the Chad Lake, of the Lake Chad in Africa, to for irrigation and for development. So the projects are there. The infrastructural projects exist. The only thing which is missing is the will to realize that, and that's what we're fighting for, together, of course, with the looking at this Obama impeachment as the key to start this completely different set of ideas and of programs for Europe, for Italy, and for the world.
And Tanu, you were speaking about the natural prospect for Eurasia.
Yeah, but before that, I just want to add one thing, is that I fully agree with Marcia that the war situation can be averted completely overnight if, you know, Obama is out of the White House. The fact, you know, one can go back and look at the early 1950s when Nasser had nationalized Suez Canal and the British and Israelis had moved in to bomb and expecting Washington support, but what they got was from Eisenhower a real slap on their face. And that itself created a stability in that area which lasted for a while. Now, if Washington doesn't provide succor to these guys, to these British and Saudi forces on this war, building up a war-like situation, immediately the war-like situation can be averted. But once that is done, then the China, Russia, India, as far as I'm concerned, the most important thing, they are still not there. The most important thing for them at this point in time is to bring forward on the table, put on the table right now, is a new international financial system. And that raising the level there will immediately get enormous support from nations all around the world. And there is a way to judo this war mongers is by, you know, going for a new financial system. And once new financial system is set up, then, as Liliana was saying, that the projects are there. Projects are not big deals. They are, you know, they need money, they need political capability. All these things are more important than. There are engineers, there are workers, and there are materials, and you can build any amount of thing anytime you want. But in order to build, you need the financial system has to be there, the ground condition has to be such that there is a general support for development exists not only within but outside as well. And the third thing is the political leadership to come to the fore and present to the people why this is done. This is done for their children, their grandchildren. And once that is the way that, you know, any nation or area or region can be, you know, developed. And I think that there is still leadership exists in Russia, which they're trying to dismantle. Leadership exists in China. Some level of leadership exists in India. And there are countries, Japan, South Korea, Argentina, look around in Europe, and you will get leadership. And once this major thing, which is going to change the world completely, is a new financial system, which will allow nations and region to develop, if that is being presented, then I think the counter to the war thing can be placed, you know, firmly on the table.
Okay, well, I think we have our work cut out for us, as described by Liliana and Tanu. And I'll reiterate to people, watch live or watch posted December 11, 4:30 in the afternoon Eastern Time, Lyndon LaRouche address. It will be webcast internationally. It's beamed. It's focused on an audience event in northern New Jersey hosted by Diane Sayre, part of the National Slate. And on December 17th, be sure and watch the special LaRouchePack.com. We'll have it on LaRouche Pub where you can see it. Basement Research Team webcast on a policy initiative for the survival of the human species. And that means we have to get this man out of the White House, and we have to stop this very live war threat. So again, I thank Liliana, thank Tanu. This is the end of the December 10th LaRouche Show.
Glad to be here, Marcia.
Okay.
Nice here. Thank you.
Okay. And we'll count on a new year, won't we?
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ciao.